Welcome to the .NET Weekly Audio Show. Today is Thursday, May 3rd, 2018. My brother's 41st birthday. Happy birthday, Brian. I know you're not listening. My other brother listens from time to time, even though he's not a wrestling fan. But anyway, I am Jason Powell. He is Jake Barnett. And it's not the busiest time in pro wrestling. We just came through that WrestleMania Greatest Royal Rumble stretch, and now we're into Backlash, which we'll be previewing in a little bit. But today was the WWE first quarter financial report release, along with the conference call that was headed up by Vince McMahon, and then co-presidents George Berrios and Michelle Wilson. We'll start with that, Jake. I just found it to be much ado about nothing as far as the conference call is concerned. They just weren't ready to answer any specific questions. I mean, I get the strategy. You're not gonna, if you're not ready to talk about your television deal, there's nothing to talk about, then you know you're gonna deflect, and that's pretty much what they did throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, there was a slight increase in the number of WWE Network subscribers compared to last year. They didn't really change the split between domestic and international that much. I think it's moved like 1% a year over the past couple of years. So it used to be like closer to 80% domestic and 20% international network subscribers, and now it's below 75%. So they are moving the needle a little bit in that direction, but revenue is basically the same. Their profit hadn't moved that much, so maybe their second quarter will be, you know, where they start announcing the outcome of some of these bigger initiatives they have planned. They've talked about, you know, tiering the network. They've talked about, you know, how much WrestleMania was driving the number of views on the network. They said it was like the highest viewed WrestleMania ever. I don't know how they, you know, they must have some fairly decent statistics on that, but they didn't really tell us how many of those people had watched for free, so it's kind of a useless number at this point. So, yeah, I mean, there wasn't a whole lot to go over here. The first quarter is typically pretty quiet. And they're still in the midst of their television contract negotiations, and they're not going to talk about that. And the tiering thing appears to be something that they must be working through as a part of the rights negotiations, so they're not going to announce anything about that. It was a fairly straightforward, you know, yeah, we made pretty much the same money as last year conference call.
They put a happy face on it, no doubt about it, because, I mean, there was a time when it was awkward. It seemed like things were good, and Vince McMahon would be kind of doom and gloom about it, and that's no longer the case. It seems like they're always trying to sell, you know, that they're happy with their numbers, if there's any reason to be whatsoever, even if things are pretty much just holding steady. And, let's start with this. Can we blame Jinder Mahal for international not increasing? Can we just pin it all on Jinder?
You know, I think pinning it on anybody would be a mistake, but if we want to pin it on somebody, Jinder's the right person.
Well, and I'm joking, obviously, but, I mean, look, they probably thought they were going to, we don't see a regional country-by-country kind of breakdown of things, but I'm guessing that, you know, that was a big part of their plan, was to break into India, and, I mean, aren't the pay-per-views free there anyway? So, I mean, there's really not much incentive for the Indian consumer to purchase the network, and then from them trying to localize it, I think you've pointed out there's so many different languages in India, it makes it a difficult task for them to do.
Yeah, I think their biggest issue is what you've already mentioned, that there's really no incentive to subscribe to the network in India, because a lot of that content either isn't localized or they already get it for free if they subscribe to, you know, existing Indian sports networks that carry WWE programming, including pay-per-views as part of their normal subscription model. So I don't think there's a lot of growth potential unless they change how that, you know, those rights are negotiated for rebroadcast. Or, you know, if they are able to get some more monetization of their social media and YouTube and things like that, that seems to be where most of their growth internationally is happening. They are getting a lot of hits on YouTube views in foreign countries, but they don't really localize much of that either. So I don't know. It's going to be a hard road ahead if they're trying to increase revenue from countries that they often tend to give away content in because they don't have much of a presence.
I did get a kick out of them saying that the television rights deal could be announced anytime between now and September. So, I mean, Jake, should I just not go to softball tonight because it could be today?
I have a feeling that'll probably end up being announced at one of their quarterly calls, or they'll probably just send out a press release for an event ahead of time where they announce their new partner, or if they're re-signing with NBC Universal, then it may be, you know, just something a lot simpler. I think if they're going to have a new partner, it'll probably happen at a major press event.
They did say they'd have a presence at the NBC upfront. Stephanie McMahon will be leading the charge there, and they didn't want to give away who else would be there because they didn't want to step on NBC's toes. And, you know, the thing to remember is that, look, they're, no matter what happens with their television agreement or their television rights agreement, they're on USA Network. And, you know, as Raw and SmackDown stay put until, I think it's end of September of 2019. And so, yeah, I wouldn't read anything into that. I mean, hell, they could announce a new television deal there even. But there's, I mean, even if they're Fox bound, you know, they can still have a presence at the upfront. So I don't read too much into that. I would say if I learned anything from this conference call, it's that while Vince McMahon considers sneezing to be a sign of weakness, I don't think he gives that same assessment to clearing his throat. Because I think, I mean, all we heard from Vince was his statement up front and then a lot of throat clearing.
Yeah, that must be a thing that comes with age. I think I've been in a part of several conference calls in the business world where you had people clearing their throats constantly, and it always seemed to be older men. So maybe it's just a thing that he now has to accept is what's happening to him.
I mean, it's Vince. He may be in, like, right out of the carnival show. Like, every time he clears his throat, he may be whipping himself. I'm not even sure. There was a character on that show who was very religious and very upstanding. I think it was Carnival. Maybe I'm getting my shows confused, but I think actually I am. I think it was the what was the one? Boardwalk Empire. There was a character that would beat himself. And I've always wondered if Vince does that in his old age now. But all kidding aside, Michelle Wilson clearly was armed and ready if somebody was going to bring up the whole Saudi Arabia thing and the fact that women were not allowed to wrestle and or appear there in any facet. And so when somebody did bring it up, she just, you know, was just raring to go. You could tell, like, this was I took it this way anyway, Jake. No way of knowing for sure, but I certainly came away feeling like this was not a planted question by any means, but they were ready for it, and it was their definite plan to have the female on the call answer that question.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't seem to be, you know, widely reported, but it sounds like Sami Zayn may have been in the same boat. Like, he just wasn't allowed into the country. And right. I don't know exactly why that was the case, if it was something related to his Syrian heritage or if it was something.
That's the assumption.
I know that Saudi Arabia has difficulty, or, you know, either doesn't allow in, or, you know, you have to, like, find a way to hide it in your passport, but they don't allow people who have been to Israel into the country very easily. So it's, there are some very ugly compromises that WWE is making, you know, by entering into these markets that are dominated by, you know, regimes and cultures that have poor human rights records. And they try to put their best positive spin on it, you know, whether it's having Michelle Wilson answer questions like this or have Triple H kind of talk about how they, you know, they do their best to respect other cultures. And just because it's not up to Western standards doesn't mean that it's not relevant. You know, they've had multiple people kind of field this, and they all give a very corporate filtered answer. And then I think that's basically all you're going to get out of them. If you're expecting some kind of mea culpa or apology for this, it's not forthcoming.
No, it's quite simply what we've said all along. They did this for the money. And, you know, they can spin it however they want, but this is a very lucrative deal. That's why they're doing it. It has nothing, you know, it's pretty comical just, you know, hearing from the great defenders of the almighty WWE, just, you know, fans that want to watch the show. And as you talked about last week, feel good about what they're watching. They just latch right onto this stuff. They lap it right up and regurgitate it. And you know, you gotta basically just saying that WWE is trying to be part of change. And it's like, they're just taking the money. Can we just call it what it is? They're not going to say it publicly, but it doesn't mean that fans need to just regurgitate it. That's kind of the thing that I just kind of roll my eyes at, is when fans seemingly buy in hook, line, and sinker, or know better, and still will just regurgitate what WWE says about this. It is what it is. It's the money, folks. But a 10-year deal. Sounds like they're going back in the fall. That was advertised or announced at the actual event itself. That not the same venue, but a different part of the country. And so I don't know if that's going to be a big network spectacular or more of an untelevised house show. But I've already, you know, I did my audio review, a quick one, of the Greatest Royal Rumble because it felt like it was a really big house show that happened to be on TV. And, I mean, hey, there was a lot of star power there, no doubt about it, but it just didn't feel like it mattered. And it kind of, for me, made the WrestleMania hangover kick in. And, well, you know, just putting all the politics aside, you look at the lineup and I'm like, hey, this, you know, this has the potential to be a fun show. And then when you see, you know, a double DQ or a double countout finish for the WWE Championship match and just, you know, a lot of the things about the show, I just came away underwhelmed and it didn't leave me excited about WWE programming this week or even Backlash. But we haven't heard from you, Jake. Your take on the Greatest Royal Rumble. What did you take away from the event?
I didn't take away a whole lot, to be honest with you. I mean, it seemed like I don't know if you caught this, but, you know, Cole and Graves seemed a bit uncomfortable at times.
Yeah.
On commentary. So that stuck out to me. I was very surprised to see them go to the lengths they did with the Daivari brothers waving the Iranian flag with, you know, a lot of the Saudi royal family sitting, you know, right opposite the hard camera in their very expensive looking loungers that they put out there for them. So that was a bit surprising, and it seemed to get the reaction they wanted, maybe more than they wanted, because I know there was some death threats and things like that sent Sean Daivari's way. But
Aria's actually, and, well, Sean, I interviewed Sean yesterday for the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast, which everybody can check out, and you know he painted a very rosy picture of everything when it came to just the overall tour. And when it comes to the death threats, for those who haven't heard, I'll just give a quick recap of it. Basically, he said he's been getting them throughout his career. I mean, to him, it was much ado about nothing. He just ignores it. You know, he worries when it comes to Aria, and obviously it's his brother, and he doesn't know. He assumes if there's something serious about it, WWE is going to take every precaution. But he just, you know, I almost came away, and I did ask him about this, and he comments on it. I came away feeling like he, like this is Aria, maybe his first real exposure to this sort of a thing. You know, he's a guy that worked a lot of independents over the years, and he's worked babyface and he's worked heel. And where this was, you know, he's been on the national stage now, but maybe quietly, because he's part of the Cruiserweight division. But this was kind of the first time that I think he's really had to put up with that sort of a thing. I don't know that definitively, but he talks about that as well. So just wanted to kind of give a recap of that for people who haven't checked it out yet.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, those things are out there. I mean, that was probably the most controversial element of the show. But I mean, none of the finishes really stuck out to me as being all that important. You know, I didn't think it advanced anybody's career. You know, Braun Strowman won what was, I think, a rather uneventful Royal Rumble, other than you know, Titus O'Neil making a meme out of himself by falling in front of the ring apron. So I mean, there's. Yeah, you know, that was the biggest, probably, public relations moment coming out of that whole show, was the fact that Titus O'Neil had a flub. You know, there wasn't a whole lot going on, and it didn't really seem to be hanging over Monday's Raw or Tuesday's SmackDown all that much, to be honest. It just kind of felt like its own thing that happened that didn't have a whole lot of impact on the way the company was going.
Yeah, I mean, with Braun, I mean, they showed the, you know, they had not the title belt, but the trophy at ringside, but there was, I don't think they had the title belt displayed at all that they gave him for winning the Greatest Royal Rumble, and there was no indication that this means something. It wasn't like, I mean, we kind of, that was an issue we had going into it, is like, okay, they're fighting for a trophy, and then they added a meaningless title belt to it, but there was no title shot, nothing of real high stakes, it felt like. And like, they didn't even, I mean, they acknowledged that he won the Greatest Royal Rumble, but it wasn't like this leads to big things for him. I mean, hell, he's working a tag match on the Backlash show that, again, we'll get into a little bit later. But yeah, I mean, it really did feel like an inconsequential show. I mean, if you're somebody who, it does seem like from listening to different people, it seems like if you are somebody that watched the show for all 5 hours, you know, consecutively, you came away really underwhelmed, and maybe it was better if it was something you broke into sections and just kind of watched at your leisure. You know, maybe you watched a third of it here and a third of it there, you know, that sort of a thing. But yeah, it, I don't know, it just, it was a show. The Daivari thing, you know, what's your take on this? Because again, I did feel like Sean painted a very rosy picture of everything over there, and that's, you know, he may be shooting 100% straight, but I did ask him when it comes to the fan reaction that he and Arya received. He's a Minnesota guy too, so it's like, is this more hatred or is this more of a Packer Viking rivalry? I mean, there's some hatred there too with some lunatic fans, but I mean, just more all in fun type of thing. And he said it was definitely, he sensed it was Packer Viking and that people got it. He felt like, he was still getting requests for autographs and things like that. And it wasn't, he didn't sense any hatred toward him coming out of the event that wasn't there going in. It just, he thinks that fans got it more than we may realize.
I think that's a fair assessment. I mean, I wasn't there. I just, you know, I saw the reaction. I was just more surprised that they got that level of political on the show, knowing that it was a kind of a state-sponsored event and that they had the royal family in the house. And, you know, there was just there's always the risk that somebody important is going to take offense to it. I didn't think that, you know, the common Saudi Arabian fan would be unhinged and charge the ring or that kind of thing. It did seem like the fans in the arena were pretty clued in as to what was going on.
One thing I'll say positive about this thing, you know, again, putting the politics aside and all of that, and even just the Blah show, just seeing those kids, you know, just the crowd shots of the kids, and you can see, I forget, hey, they're some of them obviously at ringside are born into the royal family and all that. They're still kids. And so whenever they would show a kid on camera, it was pretty cool just to see their reactions
including, you know, little girls. Like, right. You know, up until January of 2018, young women and women in general were generally not allowed into public sporting events. And so, I mean, you're coming from, you know, the relative backwater of women's rights and culturally. And so I think something like that is a big step forward, even if there's a lot of things about Saudi Arabian culture that are still, you know, not anywhere close to what we would consider acceptable Western standards.
Yeah. And when I say, you know, the reaction of the kid, it's not, look, WWE is putting them on there to, you know, make themselves look good to a point as well. I'm not even looking at it from, oh, good for WWE. I'm just looking at it through the eyes of the kids because, you know, most of us have been that kid at a wrestling show for the first time and just that fun experience if you're a big fan and you finally get to see it in person. And that was the cool thing, just seeing, you know, knowing those kids had that experience and obviously the ones they didn't show in the venue. But yeah, I mean, we're going to see 9 more years of this, Jake, and I don't know, I guess if you want to do a big super house show again like this one was, again, albeit a loaded one in terms of who was on the show, but just more of a meaningless style show, that's fine. You want to advertise it or you want to air it on the network, that's fine, but I really hope, Jake, that they don't do it so damn close to WrestleMania next time. This is just too much. I think it's having a negative effect on the Backlash show, and not just in terms of their ability to promote it, but just kind of this blah feeling heading into Sunday that I think a lot of us have.
Yeah, I mean, it would be a good show to have during one of the slower times of the year domestically. It did seem a bit odd to put it at this point in the schedule, but maybe that's just, you know, what the Saudis wanted. You know, like, they were paying a lot of money for this, and they wanted it when they wanted it. So maybe next year, you know, they can negotiate for a different date that fits better into their schedule. But we'll see what happens. It's clear that they want this partnership to succeed. And they're willing to, you know, to make compromises in order to make that happen and get access to all that money that the Saudis are throwing in their direction. But I mean, did you see the press release that was put out in response to the event kind of disavowing portions of it? I don't know if you.
Oh, the fact that they. I think it was their sports commission. I can't remember what it's labeled, but essentially.
RSAC, I think the Royal Saudi something. It's something commission. I can't remember.
Yeah, and they were apologizing for basically Carmella, Sasha Banks, images of them appearing on the big screen when they played the commercial touting the dual brand pay per views, I think is what it was.
Yeah, and I guess there was also that, you know, nobody apologized for it, and it wasn't included in the press release, but there was quite a bit of sentiment on Twitter where people, I'm assuming, you know, more conservative members of Saudi society were talking about how they didn't appreciate young girls and women being in the audience while men were wrestling in their underwear. So there seems to be, you know, quite a bit of cultural barriers to overcome yet.
Yeah, and yet, I mean, the apology thing, people were kind of taking, I had people asking, like, is this even more embarrassing for WWE? It's like, no, I don't think it is. I mean, if anything, they should have known it was coming. If they agreed not to place this, you know, any type of images like that on the big screen, and they did, well, then they kind of got what they had coming. They knew what the situation was, and I think the only thing this really did, Jake, was just draw more attention to the fact that WWE ran there for mainstream media members that maybe just really didn't know much about it, and all of a sudden they're seeing this apology making some headlines. And otherwise, I mean, it's their culture. It's not right, in my opinion, but I wasn't surprised that they were bothered by this.
No, I'm assuming that was supposed to air on the network and not air in the arena, and somebody made an unfortunate mistake. I really don't know how else to see how that may have happened, but you know, it is what it is. I mean, it really did seem like a, you know, that was a political apology meant to placate people who were upset more than it'll damage WWE's relationship with, you know, with the Saudi Arabians.
Yeah, and we even had a correspondent who was at, one of our readers was at the show and made it seem like, yeah, there was a lot of hooting and hollering. So, I mean, there's definitely, I think, the old guard, and I think the younger generation is ready for change by and large. And, hey, I mean, again, WWE did this for the money, but all you can do is hope that, yeah, change is coming over there. But, yeah, it's was not the greatest Royal Rumble. Clearly, it was a Royal Rumble that I'd like to forget. Switching gears here a little bit, I guess another company that's looking to make foreign money, New Japan Pro Wrestling, Jake. They're running the Cow Palace. I believe it's is it Independence Day weekend, 4th of July weekend?
I believe they're running it. I think the 4th of July falls like in the middle of the week this year.
Yeah.
And so they're running the following Saturday, the 7th. I guess it technically would be Independence Day weekend if you want to call it that.
Yeah, and I know Sean Radican at the Torch had a report up indicating that, you know, this is what, a 9,000-10,000 seat venue, I believe it is.
And seats 12,000 for 12. Hockey, so I'm assuming it would probably seat a few thousand more for wrestling if they wanted to put people on the floor.
Okay, so yeah, I mean, it's a big venue, and he indicated that they'd sold roughly, I think it was 3,000. I'll pull up Sean's report. And he noted that there were initial reports that it was like over 4,000, but that actually wasn't the case because they set aside 1,000 of them for, I don't know if it's Honor Club, but it just, there's some special thing that they set us, it'd be the equivalent of being in the Honor Club. I don't know what they call, if it's just New Japan World subscribers or what. So they didn't sell as many as it may have seemed, I guess, was the idea. And it just sounds like, in general, this is off to a slower start than what they had anticipated. And here's Sean's report on this from PWTorch.com. He said the actual ticket sold, and this was as of yesterday, was about 3,300. And he said the reason it appears that there's around 4,500 is that Ticketmaster marked 1,000 seats as sold that are reserved for the New Japan World Club. So there it is, in Japan. So, yeah, I mean, 3,300. Look, if this were a different venue, I mean, hell, they would have sold out the first venue they ran. Is this, I mean, I see a lot of people, New Japan's in trouble. 3,300 tickets day one with nothing advertised? Is that a bad thing?
No, I don't think it's like a, you know, the end of the world for them. I do think it damages the opinion held by a lot of people that, you know, they could be successful if they were a touring brand in the United States. You know, it's 3,000 seats on day one is, I mean, if you look at the seating chart on the arena, you know, there's basically every section other than the ones that are reserved for, you know, whatever their, you know, their special attendees are, still have seats available. And so, and I think a lot of those 3,000 may have gone to ticket resellers. I checked, you know, Ticketfly and StubHub, and they all had tickets. I think StubHub had several hundred just by themselves. And so it's, I think it's sort of troubling. And maybe as they announce, you know, more matches for the show, ticket sales will pick up and this will be a non-issue as we get closer to July. But, the idea that people are going to be flying all over the place to see New Japan in the United States and, you know, these are going to be hot tickets, I think that impression was dealt a blow by the whole scenario.
Yeah, I know people were worried about the last show that they did because it was so close to WrestleMania that a lot of those super fans who will travel for the event already had a lot of money invested in going to Mania. Well, they didn't have any trouble selling out that venue. They did well there and in Long Beach, and now they moved to San Francisco at the Cow Palace. And look, you know, I think there is, you know, who knows what that number is. I think there are, obviously there are some super fans. I don't know that it's 10, 12,000 of them that are, just have that type of budget that are automatically going to fly out for something like this. But I think, look, I mean, Sean's report indicates that they're looking to bring in a big name, and the rumored name is already, you know, Chris Jericho returning. He has that lingering issue with Tetsuya Naito from a storyline, and so that may be what Sean is referring to. I don't know. Maybe they're looking at another big name. I don't know. I just think, look, New Japan can work harder. They can. I don't live in the Bay Area, so but I'm guessing they haven't done a lot of advertising or anything. I think they've been able to just bank on, we're New Japan Pro Wrestling. We're coming to the United States. Here's the event. We're not going to tell you who's on it. Buy your tickets now. And they've had no reason to do anything other than that because they've been successful until now. I think that, you know, they can have they can obviously buy some advertising in the area. They can announce some matches ahead of time. There's different things they can do. And like, and one of the things I know I told you off air in a DM exchange we had is, look, if you're worried about this being financially successful, well, don't give us 400 six-man tag matches. Leave some talent home. It's okay. We don't need to see every single wrestler on the New Japan roster. I think it would make for a better show if you had more singles matches anyway, Jake.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, they can leverage, you know, the talent exchange they have with Ring of Honor to an extent, and obviously they'll bring over some of their bigger names and you know, and enough people to fill out the show. But yeah, I don't think there's a burning desire to have all of these typical New Japan multi-man tag matches that they use to fill up their, you know, their touring shows, you know, to give people a break physically so they're not working single matches on a consistent basis. If they're going to run a big arena in the U.S., they, you know, hopefully we do get some tag matches and singles matches that seem to matter at some level.
Does it feel like they're cooling off at all? I mean, I know that's a concern that people have just seeing this one attendance figure, but look, I mean, I was enjoying what I was watching, and then so I guess to kind of play into this, to add to that question, is it more just the time of the year? I mean, it's not like they've had a lot of English broadcasts on New Japan World lately. It's just that kind of a stretch where it's Japanese broadcasts. And so is it more the time of year, or do you think, no, this is starting to cool off a little?
No, I won't say they're cooling off as a brand. I think, you know, there's that hectic period around Wrestle Kingdom every year, and then people kind of tune out for a while, and then people get reinvested when it comes time for the G1, and then you can kind of tune out for a while, and then, you know, you kind of get ramped up again at the end of the year. I think if you're an English fan of New Japan, that's probably not an unfamiliar you know, thing for anybody, so that may be a part of it. I can't deny that. I think you may be right. They may have just sort of, you know, tossed out and the ticket sale date just to see what they could do without a whole lot of promotion. And now, you know, they've sold a fair number, and as they ratchet up the pressure and maybe buy some local advertising time and spend a little bit more time locally, you know, pushing out and doing promotion, maybe they'll, you know, they might fill that arena up by the time the show airs on pay-per-view.
Yeah, well, this one, I think it's going to be another access broadcast, unless you've heard otherwise. I know it wasn't official, but people who dealt with access I think it was Strong Style Evolved event, were, you know, pretty certain that, yeah, that's the plan. Has there been any change there? And there I go, my Vince McMahon throat clearing moment. I'm getting old.
Not that I've seen. So I hope whoever is doing this for Access, you know, is a, you know, the crew learns from some of the production mistakes that were made at the previous show, and they get this one down a little bit sharper, because I know, you know, there's been, you know, questions about how prepared they were and some of the camera work and some of the audio not cutting out, and hearing, you know, JR and Josh, you know, swearing about things as the show was headed to commercial, and, you know, there's just a lot of things that should have been caught and improved. So if that's the case this time, you know, hopefully they everybody comes in better prepared, including the announcers, who I know were widely panned last time.
Right. One thing I heard about that is that, yeah, they're aware of their shortcomings. And I don't know so much about, you know, the not going to commercial when they're supposed to. I'm sure they are, but they've talked with people about bringing in some different wrestling people to help with this broadcast, because I believe the guy who basically was the director of the show, he is very experienced, but it's in the MMA world, and it's just a different animal. And so in that way, he wasn't prepared for it. But it sounds like they are taking steps to address that. So we'll see what happens. But, you know, and remember, you know, the last time, I don't mean to be a New Japan apologist here, but the last time for Strong Style Evolved in Long Beach, we knew going into the first day of ticket sales, we were getting the Young Bucks against Kota Ibushi and Kenny Omega. Because I remember right out of the gate, you had one of the Bucks saying we should have run a bigger venue after they sold out so quickly, where this time we have nothing. There's nothing advertised. So, I mean, it's and in that regard, I mean, you may be right. They may have just wanted to know how we will draw, not advertising anything, but does that hurt them? I mean, is there, if you turn around and now you announce a big, let's say it is Naito and Jericho, or they do a Bucks and Omega and Ibushi rematch, is there going to, do you sense there'll be the same immediacy in terms of, I need to order these tickets and go to this show, that there would have been had it coincided with the first day of ticket sales?
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, and, you know, maybe they'll announce something that's just so, you know, so relevant and you know, tuned into what their fans are looking for, that there'll be this huge run on tickets, and that's always a possibility. But I don't think it's the same thing as having something like the storyline that had been building for quite a while over in New Japan at other events with the Bucks and the Golden Lovers, and, you know, having that heading into this show before tickets are on sale. I can't imagine it's going to generate the same type of demand that existed there.
Yeah, we'll follow it. I mean, I'm definitely looking forward to the show again. It should be a good time. And then, obviously, right around the corner, I know a week from Sunday, they're having the All-In press conference in Chicago. It's weird that it's on a Sunday, but it's because Ring of Honor is holding one of their, Global Wars or War of the Worlds shows in Chicago that day. So you'll have New Japan and Ring of Honor talent there who are going to be appearing on that show. And, I mean, everything, Joe Koff certainly didn't deny it, but everything I've ever heard about this is that it's an ROH show. I think ROH is actually listed on the poster. And, I do believe that Cody and the Bucks have a lot of creative freedom on this. So it's not like it's just your standard ROH show. I mean, they're trying to make this different, and I think you'll definitely see some differences. The big question remains whether this ends up being broadcast on WGN, because I know that's something that has been discussed, whether it's more daydreaming if this can happen or if they know it's going to happen. And so hopefully we'll get some answers on that next week. So worst case scenario, Jake, I assume that, okay, if it doesn't end up on WGN, I'm guessing this is just a sign-up for Honor Club, maybe even New Japan World. Maybe there's some sort of a simulcast even. I don't know, but I think one way or another people are going to be able to see this show.
Yeah, I sure hope so. It would be a huge miss to not have it readily accessible online for people to stream. Whichever service they choose, or if they decide to roll their own, you know, with a streaming partner, that could work too. You know, New Japan, I mean, despite you know, some of the language barrier issues, has seemed to have, you know, a fairly good you know, network infrastructure. I guess I can't really speak for Honor Club, as I haven't watched a show there yet, but I know the last show seemed to have some real growing pains, and the response.
Last big one, anyway.
Yeah, and the you know, and the response of we're spinning up more capacity as we speak wasn't terribly reassuring. So, I guess I hope they have everything, you know, down to where everybody who wants to see that show can do so without any major problems.
On the Impact Wrestling side of things, I did receive an email from a reader who asked a good question, or just actually made a good observation, which is that the Slammiversary pay-per-view, which they've advertised, and they had the big video on the last pay-per-view, Redemption pay-per-view, showing this cool venue with all these lighting things. And so, I mean, it's set for, I think it's July 22nd at the Rebel Complex in Toronto. And the reader pointed out, like, he's been trying to wait to see when this is going to be advertised on the venue because he wants to go to the show, I assume. It's still not advertised on there. They have some kind of weekly thing advertised for the Saturday night that they always do. I did reach out to Impact Wrestling PR to see if they would comment on this, and so far nothing back. It might be the same day that they're doing the conference call thing that they do. For those wondering why they don't get covered, it's because usually they're airing at a time that we either do this show, or I'm on Wade Keller's show, or I look at who's listed and go, eh, whatever. But yeah, so I don't want to read too much into that. Hopefully there's no issue there, but I did find it interesting that, yeah, so far the venue, they've advertised other things for, you know, even further down the road. So it's not like, they just haven't updated it yet. As far as, they don't update their site that far out. It doesn't appear to be that issue. So hopefully there's nothing going on there. But if I hear back from Impact PR during the show, I'll certainly let you guys know. And if you don't see it on the site, I actually did just hear back from them. A very simple yes, as far as the show still being on for the Rebel Complex in Toronto. So there you go. Instant news. Another thing about Impact Wrestling that I'm hearing, don't be surprised if, it just sounds like there's some issues with the company, Anthem, not making certain payments. I not necessarily to talent. I haven't really heard about that, but it sounds like there's some frustrated folks when it comes to some financial matters that will probably go public soon unless things are rectified. So just keep that in mind.
It may be possible that the two things you just mentioned are related in terms of securing the venue, but we'll have to see how that plays out.
Yeah, I mean, again, their PR says the show is on, so hopefully they'll just update the advertising on the venue website and clear all that up. But yeah, Impact says as of just a minute ago that things are good to go. There's a couple of WWE-related topics that I want to hit on, but I want to make sure we have time to do a preview of the Backlash show. So we'll do that now, and then if we have time on the back end, we'll maybe talk about some of the other WWE-related topics. But the show is Sunday in Newark, New Jersey at the Prudential Center. Thank God it's the traditional time slot. Now, they may still change this. I mean, I don't know what their agreements are, how far out with pay-per-view companies and things, because, yes, these shows still do air on non-satellite, basically. A lot of cable companies still carry the pay-per-views. So they may not be able to just up and switch to a four-hour pay-per-view event just yet. I don't know. I'm probably talking out of my ass. They could probably, you know, make that happen if they wanted to. But so far, so good with the one-hour kickoff show at the traditional 6 Central, 7 start time, 7 Eastern start time, and then the pay-per-view itself starting at 7 Central, 8 Eastern, and being listed for 3 hours. We know they can go long. They've done that before. But it's the reason I say that is because there's been so much speculation that when they switched back to dual-brand pay-per-views that it was going to lead to the shows going for 4 hours, the actual event itself, including a kickoff show. So I think most people were assuming if they did that, the time that the kickoff show starts now would actually be the start of the actual pay-per-view, and they'd still do a kickoff show. I mean, as I always say, I know there's people listening to this right now because we certainly do attract a hardcore wrestling fan audience that are going, what do you mean? That's what I want. And for me, Jake, it's not even so much the workload. It's just an extra hour. It's not a big deal. I just don't think it's the right move. I think you're asking too much of your more casual audience that you need to attract to sit through another hour monthly of the pay-per-view. I think 3 hours is right.
Yeah, and even that may be pushing it for some, you know, like it's a lot of time to commit to something on a weekend, in the evening before you go back to work. You know, if you're on the West Coast or the East Coast, you're already, those are coming to a close at like 11 o'clock at night, you know, for some. And so it's it would be a difficult push to go another hour further. I mean, I could see the approach that you mentioned where, they either revamp or change the way the pre-shows are done in order to get more matches in there, and maybe they can avoid doing the obnoxiously long promos that they do now on the pre-show and just make it more about adding additional matches to these shows, and that's perfectly fine by me. You know, if they want to do a 4 hour pay-per-view and move some matches to the first hour and move some of these crappy pre-show bits into the dustbin of history, that's perfectly fine as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I think the simple solution, like if you're going to go 4 hours, is just make it clear you're going to do a preview. And you're going to have your usual panel there, but there's not going to be any matches on there. Because I feel held hostage when I watch those shows. Like, I'm not watching to find out what Jerry Lawler and Booker T's predetermined predictions for the show are. I'm watching for whatever the match is. And if they're, if you get an interview on the show, great. But I think that's the easy way to do it. Like, if they really feel like it's necessary to do a preview, just don't have any matches on that kickoff show. And that way
they should really just cut the pre-show for everything but the big four pay-per-views.
Oh, like I'm totally with you.
Nobody cares about those things. I mean, unless they're tuning in 15 minutes early, if there's some match they want to see and they know it's going to be the final segment of the pre-show.
They mean so little that during football season, I'll watch the kickoff show on my laptop with one earbud in while I watch football. It just seriously, because it like you're not getting anything, especially for that first half hour of a 1 hour kickoff show. WrestleMania, whatever, they might throw a match in there, and that's different, and I'm a lot more focused. But otherwise, it's just like it's 30 minutes of them babbling on about and going to video packages and throwing to Sam Roberts outside the building, and it's just like, this doesn't do anything. It doesn't matter. I don't even want to be watching this. Just get to the match. So there is a solution there, but hopefully they'll just I just say leave it alone. And I guess the negative of this is that, for some anyways, that you can only get so many people on the pay-per-view. I don't think that's such a bad thing. I think that means you can do more with certain people on the television shows if you choose to. And I, this isn't like they feel the need to get everybody on the WrestleMania shows. Okay, but with this, I don't feel like I need to see every WWE talent on all of the pay-per-views, so I don't think it's such a bad thing. But let's talk Backlash. The match they have listed at the top, for whatever it's worth, it doesn't always mean that it's going to be the show-closing match, but the match they have listed on top is Roman Reigns and Samoa Joe. Absolutely nothing at stake. One of them is going to be on Raw in Reigns, and the other one's going to be on SmackDown. So I guess they're blowing off a feud that really hadn't existed because Joe was sidelined. Jake, I look forward to the match because I think it can be good, but I kind of dread the outcome because I assume this is Roman gets well, and then Samoa Joe takes that loss and goes to SmackDown to be a killer after losing to Roman Reigns and having it established once again that, hey, Raw is better.
I'm kind of hoping they do some kind of non-finish to this one. I don't know how you get there. You know, it's a singles match. You know, they don't have any stipulation attached to this. But I don't know why you would have either of these guys take a clean pin here.
Right.
Like, have a DQ, have it end in, have, you know, in a chair shot or something, and then, you know, you can have somebody win the fight, but you don't have to have anybody take the pin. So yeah. That's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah, and I mean, even if they do that, I just assume Roman's standing tall at the end while Joe's backpedaling, that sort of a thing. But it's okay. It is what it is. But here's what I worry about with Joe. He's a guy who's cutting these great, intense promos right now. He's just been on fire on the mic. He's been great. And he's claiming he's going to win the... he claimed he was going to win the four-way, win the Intercontinental Championship. He failed. Now he's claiming he's going to beat Roman Reigns. And chances are, you know, if they go with the finish like you're suggesting, great. But if they go with Reigns going over clean, again, it's all bark, no bite. And it's not like, you know, you can't get some of that back on SmackDown. But it is, I mean, is that a concern for you that it is a little too much all bark, no bite with Joe if they do give Reigns a clean win?
Yeah, that's kind of why I wouldn't go there.
You know, yeah,
there's enough. He's, you know, he's wrote some checks with his microphone work, and if he never cashes them in, like he never became Universal Champion, even though he talked real tough on Raw before his injury, and you know, he kind of resumed, picked right up where he left off when he got back from you know, from recuperating, and you know, having him take losses and in the Intercontinental Championship match, and then this one, and then you're gonna have him try to go credibly challenge the world champion on SmackDown. It doesn't really help his case to go through all that. You know, I suppose they could, you know, just have him get a surprise win and capture the WWE Championship very quickly. But I just don't know if that's in the cards for him at this point.
Why was he in the ladder match? I really don't understand what purpose that served.
They wanted to get everybody that Saudi Arabia payday. I really have no idea.
Yeah, I mean, put him in the Royal Rumble. I think we could have lived without, you know, the wannabe Yokozuna or, you know, just somebody in there. You could pull out anybody. But that to me was a little bit odd. But it was, you know, the best match of the night, no doubt about that. But anyway, AJ Styles, Shinsuke Nakamura, it's a no DQ match for the WWE Championship. I thought we were going to see Nakamura winning that championship soon. And then Joe came out and confronted Styles on SmackDown, and now I'm not so sure. It almost seems like they're foreshadowing that. So what happens here?
I'm almost like, you know, did they have Reigns and Joe go on earlier in the night and then have some Joe interfere here and cause Styles to lose the championship so they can get him into like a three-way at the next pay-per-view? I'm assuming, you know, because of this whole time discrepancy thing where they're going, you know, each brand is not going to have individualized shows, that we're probably going to see a lot more three-ways and four-ways make their way into pay-per-view main events. So I would not be surprised if we see Nakamura get a cheap victory because of Joe, and then they all end up in a title match feud for the next couple of months.
I wonder if the finish here is AJ low blows Nakamura and wins that way. It just kind of gets a little bit of payback. I like the scenario you gave. Like, maybe Joe does lose to Reigns even, and then the way they get heat back on him is he goes on this rampage and he does cost AJ the championship. If Nakamura is the champion, look, he can obviously feud with AJ Styles and Daniel Bryan. They had a Nakamura and Daniel Bryan dark match. How underwhelming is it? They wait all those years to work together and they have a dark match. But no harm done, no big deal. But with Nakamura, look, if you start, and they can go triple threat, they can go four way, whatever they want. But are there obvious opponents for Nakamura that are not AJ Styles and Daniel Bryan out there? And the reason I ask is because, look, AJ and Joe don't need a title. It's cool if they have one. It's cool if they don't. But Nakamura with the championship, I don't know that they want to go right to Daniel Bryan going for the championship. Seems like they're holding off on that for now. So who else is out there?
I think you could easily have him feud with Randy Orton. I think they work well together.
Yeah, that's true.
And then if you want to move further down the roster, if you want to give somebody a bump up into the main event for a period of time, put Rusev in there. Like, you know, I think they have a lot of options on SmackDown if they are willing to put, you know, put people on the right path towards the characters they should have versus the ones they're just settled with on television. I wouldn't even mind seeing Big E put in there. You know,
I'm with you on that.
There's a lot of people who are, you know, just in holding patterns right now that could easily contribute more than they're being tasked with at the moment.
Yeah, I'm not excited at all about New Day and Sheamus and Cesaro. And it's just, it's New Day. They just do, like, this pancake thing just keeps going on and on. Like, I'm not saying you need to turn Big E, as we've talked about. You can keep New Day together, but you can split off Big E in terms of letting him do the singles work while the other two do tag match. I'd like to see that. So you sold me. I don't know that they're going to feel the same way about it, but you sold me on it. Jeff Hardy is an option, but he's also U.S. champion, at least for now. We'll see. Then they have Seth Rollins against The Miz for the Intercontinental Championship. Why is this happening? I mean, I know contractually Miz is obligated, blah, 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 but look, it would be different if Jeff Hardy were defending the U.S. Championship against someone from the Raw side. And this is WWE. They can make up the rules if they want to shock us and put two secondary titles on one show. Temporarily they can, and then find a way to get the other title back over. I get it, but I just think this is a match that looks attractive on paper, as if there is some question in terms of who is going to win, that I just think most fans, even if WWE shocks them right now, I think most fans are just looking at it going, ah, Seth Rollins wins, whatever, doesn't matter.
Why would you move it? I just don't. I mean, I get the idea that, okay, The Miz is an attractive Intercontinental champion because he's in this feud with, you know, I guess he's technically in a feud with Daniel Bryan. Is he, though? I mean, they kind of pulled a bait and switch there with Big Cass in a
way. I think they just want to drag it out.
Yeah, that could be, too.
But maybe SummerSlam?
I don't think it needs a championship to succeed. You know, it's one of those feuds where there's just enough animosity built up over the years that they've been kind of holding off in the background because Bryan just wasn't cleared to wrestle. But, you know, they can put video packages together that will heat that thing up, and it doesn't really require a championship, and it can feel like a major match. So I don't see any reason why the title would move off of Seth Rollins here. He's having a great run, and if they're going to move it off of him, they should move it on to somebody who they want to hold on to that championship long term, and it should be something that catapults him back into the main event, because he's basically what they want Roman Reigns to be anyway.
Yeah, Rollins goes over probably clean with the stomp. Is that one of the luxuries of doing the dual brand shows? You know, or one of the pros of it is that, look, if this were, let's say, this or the next show were SmackDown exclusive, maybe they'd feel a little more pressure to rush into Daniel Bryan against The Miz. And I know people want to see it, and they're like, hey, that'd be great, but you don't have to. You can save that for a bigger show, such as SummerSlam, which is, that's my guess is what they're doing, is just making people wait for it. Again, where, you know, if this were a SmackDown exclusive show, well, we gotta have something, and Big Cass and Daniel Bryan isn't going to sell it, and Nakamura and Styles doesn't feel all that hot, so maybe they would feel a little more pressure to go with Daniel Bryan and Miz prematurely, I would argue.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I think they saw an opportunity to try to make Big Cass feel like he fits in the main event, because I think, you know, his size is something that Vince McMahon is just, he can't turn his back from. Like, he can't walk away from a guy, even though, you know, he has personality issues at times and he stumbles through promos at times. I mean, I think Cass has improved greatly, but you know, he wouldn't be somebody I'd peg for the main event right away. But it seems like, you know, when you're 7 feet tall, you just kind of get a pass on some of that stuff.
How do you think he's doing? You know, I guess my observation with the little person skit was that, okay, I've kind of, you know, been there and done that. Vince has got this weird fetish and he goes back to it from time to time. But I thought he was a lot more poised than we've seen him in the past. But I also didn't feel like he was carrying himself like your traditional big man. It just, like, I don't know, there's just something about the way he's moving around. It wasn't as stoic, and I just think of guys like, I mentioned Kevin Nash and Big John Studd as examples. Those are the first people that came to mind when I was doing audio. He doesn't remind me of them. He just seems to be, but at the same time, I think he's doing a good job. How did you feel about Big Cass and that verbal segment that he had?
I think he's making the best out of some really bad material. That was my take on it. Like I watched him deliver the promo, and I thought for the most part, like he felt believable, in that I think he came across like, you know, he believed what he was saying, and he was able to get through a very hostile crowd at the beginning of his promo to kind of get them to settle down so he'd actually deliver his lines. And I thought that was more mature than we've saw from him in the past, where crowds would trip him up and he would end up stumbling over lines and whatnot. So, you know, he has improved a great deal in that regard. He seems a lot more poised, like you said. But at the same time, like, I don't know why they would saddle him with a character where he hates smaller people, because when he used to be small, he thought he was pathetic, and you know, like it just doesn't seem like a typical big man character. Like, he's not confident, you know, he's just angry about the fact that smaller people get a spotlight and he's not getting it. And it seems like it would be something that would be very short lived. Like, they're going to have to come up with something completely different when he transitions out of this feud.
Him and Randy Newman. Maybe Randy Newman could be in his corner or something. They short people got no reason to live, man. But this is a big match for Cass, you know, because he's in there with Daniel Bryan, and I think he's shown that, you know, he's better on the mic than he was, and I'm, you know, still going to be a work in progress. One promo doesn't mean he's proven everything there is to prove in that regard. But he took a step forward. So now he's in there with Bryan. Can he hold up his end in the ring? It's not a match that excites me, but at the same time, you know, just looking at it from that perspective of, okay, let's see how Cass can do, I can get into it. I do worry on the flip side. Like, even though I'm, you know, saying, hey, yeah, they can drag this out a little bit and make people wait for Miz, I feel like we're missing a mission statement with Daniel Bryan. I just, he's back. Be happy he's back. And that seems to be all there is to this right now. And he's just kind of having these random matches with people. I mean, obviously, they've got him paired with Big Cass for now, but it doesn't really feel as hot as I would have anticipated it being. Like, Daniel Bryan's first matches back should feel like pay-per-view main event worthy, and this feels like something, hell, you could open the show with if you wanted to.
It may. I mean, to be honest, I think they still view Daniel Bryan differently than fans do. Like, they think he succeeded because he was the, you know, he was the ultimate underdog, and then he overcame, the company in order to succeed. And now they seem to want to put him back into a position where he's the underdog again. And I don't think fans really buy him in that scenario. And I don't know if it's going to succeed, but I think Vince still sees him in a role where he is constantly having to overcome, you know, obstacles, bigger wrestlers, you know, the company's politics getting in his way. I think at this point in Bryan's career, he should be having dream feuds and dream matches, because we don't know how long it can possibly last, you know. But I think they just want to put it back to work to get over younger talents. And while that's a good use of his time, I just don't know if he, you know, if that's the way fans perceive him at this point. You know, I have a feeling he's probably going to lose a few matches to Big Cass, and it's going to piss a few people off.
Does that happen here?
Yeah, I think he loses.
Yeah, I think so too. I don't know how they do it, but, you know, I think they're going to protect Bryan. I don't think it's going to be a clean win, but I do think Big Cass goes over. And then women's championship match on the Raw side, Nia Jax, Alexa Bliss. We'll see if Alexa suddenly got smarter. I'll just leave it at that, because she's been, it's almost like she's back wrestling in Abu Dhabi or something, Jake, the way she's been covered up lately.
Yeah, I hope they have gotten her all healed up from her surgery. It's clear that that's why she went away, and that's why she's covered up since she's been back. So, you know, whatever. I'm assuming that they, you know, they kept her out of the ring because this is when she would be good to go. And so, yeah, she'll be back and new and improved, as it were.
Who wins this one?
I think Nia wins. I don't think you move the title back onto Alexa this quickly. I don't think they really explored anything with Nia as the champion. I just think they wanted to get through this match, and then they'll move on to a new feud for Nia.
Agreed. And then we have Jeff Hardy, Randy Orton for the U.S. Championship.
This one's kind of a toss-up for me. I don't think they need to move the title back on to Randy. I think they want, you know, Jeff to feel, you know, important moving brands, winning that championship from Jinder. It was kind of his big return moment. So I'll say they keep the title on Jeff, but it probably involves interference from Shelton Benjamin.
Yeah, man, does he feel cold? But, hey, I'm all for them trying to do something with him, but I don't know, when you have him lose on SmackDown in the tag match and everything, I don't know. I just don't know that there's much there, but I think you're probably right about that one. Then on the SmackDown women's side, it's Carmella against Charlotte. I've enjoyed the build. It was, you know, pretty simple. It's just Carmella being very arrogant, and yet when push comes to shove, very fearful of Charlotte. And I think they've done a good job. And much like Cass, this is a big test for Carmella. She's saying she hasn't had a singles match in 2016. She's improved a lot. And then we got those house show reports from Monday night going, ooh, two different readers saying she was botching a lot of moves. It's just a house show. But either way, this is still a test for her.
Yeah, you know, I guess I think we've seen Carmella have decent matches on television. I don't know, if it was just a bad night on Monday, or if she, if they were trying different things heading into this match and she wasn't, comfortable with them yet. You know, there's a lot of things they do to get prepared for pay-per-view matches where they, they bust out new spots and new matches on house shows. So I guess it's possible that we get a clunker on Sunday, but I'm hopeful that they put on a good performance. I think Carmella's character work has been good. I don't think now is the time to move the title back on to Charlotte. They haven't given Carmella much of a chance. She's just had a month of pretty decent TV, so I think you keep the title with her, and maybe the Iconics get involved, or however they get to Charlotte taking a loss here.
Makes total sense to me. And, one thing I'll say about those two reports, not to doubt those particular readers, but I do think it's natural if you're watching a match between, Charlotte and Carmella, and there's some kind of a botch. Look, it may have been Charlotte. It may have been something on her end, but people are conditioned to, Charlotte's really good. Carmella's the one with the questionable in-ring history, so it must be Carmella's fault. So without seeing the match,
Charlotte's not perfect by any stretch. She's had some clunky matches on SmackDown. The one she had with Billie Kay just a couple of weeks ago was kind of a clunker. So I mean, it's she's not immune from that. It's something that happens to everybody, I think, when you're in the ring with unfamiliar opponents and whatnot. So I guess we'll have to wait and see what happens on Sunday. But I'm cautiously optimistic about this match.
And then a match that the build made absolutely no sense. It's Braun Strowman and Bobby Lashley seeking revenge for Braun Strowman pinning Kevin Owens on Monday or something. I don't know. But they're facing Owens and Sami Zayn. I think the match can be fun. Are they at all? Montreal doesn't count in terms of, all right, the rest of the world's going to react this way. But we've seen those things can be a little contagious. Strowman still gets cheered. But Lashley, he's not a babyface. They're pushing him that way. Any concern that when he's in there with Owens and Zayn, the fans are going to be siding with Owens and Zayn?
It's always possible. I don't think so, though. I think WWE's really dropped the ball with Lashley since his return. I think he returned at a weird time, the night after WrestleMania, when they were heading into the Greatest Royal Rumble and this Backlash show. They haven't really done anything with him character-wise. It's been a weird month of television for him, where he's just kind of a part of other people's feuds. And so maybe this match is them kind of settling on what he's going to be on television after Backlash. Maybe he turns on Strowman, or maybe he just ends up involved in a feud with either or both of Owens and Zayn. But the justification for this match makes little sense, other than maybe Kurt Angle still has a vendetta against Owens and Zayn for their talk back or whatever they did to him.
Yeah, I want Lashley to turn heel. I don't know that I want it to be on Braun Strowman, because that means Lashley's losing that feud. And I could be mistaken, but it's a match. I think the potential is there to be a fun match, but it's just, that booking going into it didn't make any sense. With the time we have left, a little more rapid fire here. Jake, Ronda Rousey, they've been having her on television. And I mean, I guess to their credit, they said she's full time and she's been there, I think, a lot more than any of us expected. And I think one of the reasons we laughed at, in addition to, you know, just WWE doing their thing, but one of the reasons we laughed at the idea of her being full time is that she's a special attraction. Are they damaging her by having her just, you know, appear in Natalia's corner, for instance, and just is she being overexposed right now? Or do you think, no, this is just fine?
I mean, I think she's low enough on the radar in terms of where she is on the show, you know, just kind of appearing in Natty's corner, that it's hard for me to say that they're actively doing damage to her. If she was competing in the ring on a weekly basis and, you know, and having a 50-50 feud with somebody or something, then, yeah, I'd be a lot more concerned. But it appears that she's still heavily protected, you know, in that sense. I have a feeling this is going to be a rather long, drawn-out story until we get to SummerSlam or something, and she's finally like the last person in the universe to realize that Natty's been playing her the whole time. But, you know, it's fine. I mean, I'm not a huge Natalya fan at this point in her career. I think she's, you know, she's kind of slow in the ring at times, but I think she's a very safe opponent for Ronda because she is very experienced. She can kind of guide her through that first singles match. But, you know, I think we're going to be in the midst of a storyline that lasts for another 4 or 5 months.
I guess for me, it's the presentation. When you just announce, hey, she's going to be in Natalya's corner, I may have taken a different approach. And I'm usually one to say, hey, let people know when you have a big name there. But I think had it just been, they had Mickey and Alexa come out, and then Natalya comes out solo, points, and all of a sudden it's Ronda Rousey. The crowd's not expecting it. I just think you get a better reaction. I think it feels more special than just kind of announcing, along with other matches, that she's going to be in her corner. So a little thing, but I do worry that she's on television a little too frequently these days. And then Roman Reigns, we made it this long without really getting into the weekly discussion about Roman Reigns being a heel, but are you seeing any signs? I mean, they're all of a sudden Seth Rollins is kind of being thrust into a pretty prominent babyface position. He mentioned Brock Lesnar. He also mentioned, you know, love him or hate him, he'd be stuck up for Roman Reigns. But any thought that maybe, just maybe, this is going to be not Roman Reigns winning that Universal Championship, whether it's Strowman or even Rollins winning it, and that drives Roman over the edge, that, you know, he, especially after what we saw in Saudi Arabia, the finish of that match, that Roman finally felt like he had this guy beat, and he didn't get the match, somebody else beat him to the punch, and now, finally, Roman Reigns gets angry and turns heel.
I would like to believe that that's possible. I guess I'm, you know, I'm just never quite convinced that Vince is.
But I mean, are there any signs like there in the storytelling you're seeing that maybe
not
it's
really
more realistic? Okay.
I mean, I guess he wasn't. He seemed on Monday like he was upset, but he wasn't upset at anybody in particular. Like, he was just generally grumpy. Like, oh, I'm just going to pretend that I didn't lose because I, you know, my feet hit the ground first. But, you know, it was just a bunch of nonsense. And I think they, you know, they got themselves into a rough situation because they, you know, they didn't land exactly like they hoped they would land, and so there was some question. So they had to kind of improvise their way around it. But I mean, I don't think it would happen, you know, for a couple of months until they get, you know, Lesnar back and he can actually drop the title to somebody else, whether it's, like you said, Strowman or Seth Rollins are both good choices. But, you know, it would seem to be a logical point in time to turn him if you're going to. But I could just as well see him being, you know, the buddy who's just happy that his friend took the title away from Lesnar. You know, they might book him that soft if they feel like he just needs a break away from the title picture.
And congratulations to WWE for somehow getting Jeff Hardy into Canada. I don't know, with his most recent DUI, he hasn't gone through court yet, but I don't think this isn't his first, but somehow he's able to go there when, like, for years he couldn't. I think a lot of it was probation, but we'll say this could be his final appearance there for a while, because they really frown on the DUI thing. So Canadian fans, I guess, enjoy the Jeff Hardy loop. With him being in Canada this past week in Montreal, I was kind of wondering if he was actually going to make it there, but he did. And then final question for you, Jake, a very simple one. Your level of enthusiasm for Backlash coming up on Sunday, 0 to 10.
I'm going to put myself at a 5. You know, I think there's a couple of matches on this show that could be really good, but the storytelling heading into this show has been a mess, and so it's hard for me to get really enthused about it.
Yeah, I'm in like a 3.5, 4, you know, for the same reasons. And I think once the show starts, I don't think it's going to be a bad show. I think it should be more entertaining in a lot of ways than the greatest Royal Rumble was. I think you're going to see matches overachieve rather than underachieve in many cases. And so, yeah, but hopefully this will be the last time they try to cram in this many shows for, you know, the main roster talent, because it's a bit much. But we will have live coverage. Jake and I will get together on Sunday night after Backlash for the usual audio review. And then ProWrestling.net Live will take place on Monday, 3 Central, 4 Eastern at PWAudio.net. I'll be joined on Monday by Matt Kuhn, not Johnny Fairplay, who is filling in for Will Pruitt. Will is actually going to China for work. So safe travels to Will. I think he said he heads out on Sunday. So he will not be able to co-host that show. Something about, I don't know, not being able to like call from the Chinese airport, or maybe not seeing the show while he's traveling. I don't know, but what an excuse, what a cop out. But anyway, Will, again, safe travels, and thank you everybody for listening. Thank you for supporting us on the member side. We will talk to you again very soon. Take care.